Thank you for inviting me to speak at this meeting. Obviously, what is happening now in Latin America is quite a wide subject, but I'll try to concentrate on a few key aspects, I think. Over the last 10 years, say since 98, 99, there's been quite a lot of exciting things going on in Latin America. And what we could say is that there is a revolutionary wave going through the continent. And it is now involving more and more and more countries. In some countries, we have seen the election of left-wing governments. In some other countries, we have seen mass movements of the people against electoral fraud, like, for instance, in Mexico 3 years ago, uprisings, general strikes, peasant movements. Basically, a revolution is when ordinary people who normally do not participate in politics take direct action to change their living conditions, to fight for better jobs, for better conditions, and they do that through direct action, through mass action in the streets. And I would say that's a pretty good definition of what's been happening in Latin America for the last 10 years. The masses of working people, of the poor in the cities, the peasants, the youth, have been attempting to fundamentally change and challenge the balance of forces and the distribution of economic and social, political power. Obviously, this doesn't come from now. This situation hasn't developed continent-wide just by chance, but it's rooted in the conditions that existed in Latin America 20 years ago and 30 years ago, and even you could say 200 years ago, when the continent first achieved independence from the Spanish Empire. Now, I'm not going to go into all that, but I'm going to recommend a book. There is a very good book. That's a banner falling. There's a very good book. I would say it's probably the best introduction to Latin American politics and political economy, which is called The Open Veins of Latin America. And it's by a Uruguayan Marxist writer called Eduardo Galeano. Anybody can get their hands on it. This is a pretty good introduction. During the time of the Spanish colonization, which lasted for about nearly 300-400 years, basically the continent's natural resources were looted by the Spanish Empire and then were siphoned through all the European countries and provided the basis for the building of modern-day capitalism in the advanced capitalist countries in Europe. After the Latin American countries achieved formal independence around the beginning of the 1800s, for instance, Venezuela achieved its independence in 1812, other countries in 1810. One of the first countries to achieve its independence in Latin America was Haiti in the end of the 18th century. The situation didn't change very much. These countries were formally independent, but they were ruled by what is called the oligarchies, a small group of landowners, wealthy landowners, capitalists, and so on, that ruled these countries in conjunction with imperialism. Only the imperial master had changed. It was no longer Spain, but other imperial masters, including Britain, the United States, France. But progressively, after formal independence in the 1800s, it was mainly the United States that dominated these countries in conjunction with the local oligarchy. And again, for 200 years, natural resources and wealth from these countries has been extracted, not benefited the majority of the population that live there. Throughout the 20th century, there were many attempts at changing this power structure. People fought, there were socialist governments, there were revolutions in different countries over a long period of time. The last time when there was a big revolutionary wave in Latin America was in the 1960s, 1970s. It was a cycle of revolutionary movements that probably you could say started in 1959 with the Cuban Revolution. A bit earlier, there had been a revolution in Guatemala and so on. And these cycles of revolutions in Latin America were always characterized by one thing. People attempted to change society, transform society, take economic power into their own hands, so that it will benefit the people who live in these countries. And then the U.S. Marines will intervene, organize a military coup together with reactionary sections of the armed forces and the local oligarchy, and the movement will be smashed. Tens of thousands of people will be put in jail, thousands will be killed and tortured. And this is the way that the situation worked in most Latin American countries throughout the 20th century. And this is also an interesting point because it shows the normal capitalist democracy is very difficult to maintain in a situation where there's massive social contradictions, there's big division between the classes, and the working class and the peasantry attempt to take economic and political power. The ruling class, the oligarchy and imperialism, could only resort to brute force and repression to suppress this movement, which represented the democratic will of the majority of the people. As I say, by the late 1970s, there had been military coups in a whole number of countries. There were military regimes in Brazil, Uruguay, in Argentina, in Chile, in Bolivia, in a whole number of countries. There were military regimes, and the movement had been smashed. And this set the ground for the 1980s, which were known as the lost decade for Latin America. Lost decade from the point of view that there was not much economic growth. Situation of the majority of the population was pretty dire. It was poverty levels reaching 50-60% of the population. Mass illiteracy, health coverage was almost non-existent. And this was on the basis of capitalism imposed on the basis of these dictatorships. And there was a big feeling, a mood in Latin America that, well, everything was hopeless. You could not struggle. It was very difficult to struggle against these conditions. You could not organize. And even if you organized, even if you struggled, then there was no hope, because one day the Marines, U.S. Marines, will come and smash your movement, or there will be a military coup and smash your movement. This was a pretty bad situation. On top of this, in 1989, there was the fall of the Berlin Wall, the fall of the Soviet Union, which compounded this dire economic situation, this dire political situation, with massive propaganda campaigns saying socialism doesn't work. Whatever you do, capitalism is the least worst of the systems, and you have to accept what that is. And this had a big impact on the left and the working class movements and the peasant movements in throughout Latin America. There was demoralization and so on. I always like to give this one example, of the fact that many who had led revolutionary or left-wing movements in the 1980s, which did exist, although they were not very successful, then betrayed, basically gave in to capitalist propaganda and moved very far to the right. And the example I like to give is the example of Joaquín Villalobos, who was one of the main commanders of the guerrillas that were active in El Salvador during the 1980s. And he then, during the 1990s, he moved progressively to the right and ended up being an advisor to Colombian President Uribe, who's extreme right-winger, in the struggle against insurgency. So he moved from pretty much one extreme of the political spectrum to the other end. And the same thing happened in Venezuela. Many people were involved in the guerrillas in the 1970s and 1980s, and now part of the Venezuelan opposition, which is extremely right-wing and dominated by the oligarchy. A situation that was very situation of despair, no hope, and so on. But nevertheless, the economic situation didn't change for the majority of the people. They had no other alternative to start fighting again, start struggling again. And the 1990s, the situation started to change a little bit from an economic point of view. The 1990s saw big economic growth throughout Latin America. But this economic growth was based on the following, was based on the fact that us in advanced capitalist countries, you had what was called neoliberalism, which was the opening up of the markets, the tearing down of any tariff protectionist barriers, the destruction of workers' rights. And this in Latin America, deregulation of the economy, this in Latin America had the effect that most public services were privatized. If you go now to any Latin American country, you will see that the airlines, the telecommunications companies, the banks, most of the mines, natural resources, gas, oil, and so on, is owned by multinationals. Many of these companies were previously state-owned or nationalized companies. And many of them are owned by Spanish multinationals. There's been, if you want a second colonization of Latin America by Spanish multinationals. Spanish Telefonica, telecoms company, controls telecommunications companies in most Latin American countries. Spanish banks dominate Latin American banking. This created some economic growth, but this economic growth never benefited the people of these countries. What happened was that, yes, there was a lot of foreign direct investment, but this investment went in, like for instance, into an airline company that was privatized, sold off at very low price. They took anything that was profitable from it, they sacked large numbers of workers, increased prices, and the multinationals disappeared with the money, basically. They looted these countries, and though the official economic figures were growing, and some were growing quite fast, but the majority of the people didn't benefit. And we ended the 1990s with situation in most countries, particularly in the Andean region, Peru, Bolivia, Ecuador, Colombia, and other countries in that region, where you had 60% living under the poverty level, and 30% living under extreme poverty level, a situation that couldn't be maintained anymore. And this led to big mobilizations again by the end of the 1990s. In 1998, we saw, for instance, the election of President Chavez in Venezuela as part of an upsurge of ordinary people participating in politics. We saw big movements of the people in Ecuador, for instance, where for about 5 or 6 years, three democratically elected presidents were overthrown by mass movements, general strikes, movements of the peasants. There were big movements in a whole number of countries. And this was the beginning of this new period. For the last 10 years, where a revolutionary wave, in some countries more intense than in others, in some countries going further than in others, but that swept the whole continent and has advanced the cause of the oppressed in the region. And this is very interesting because some of the things that are happening, for instance, in Venezuela, show the potential that these countries have. Because when you think about a country, say, like Bolivia, there's the two things that always appear at the beginning of a newspaper article about Bolivia, is that Bolivia is one of the poorest. It's a small country in South America. It's one of the poorest countries in the continent. But this is not really true. For starters, Bolivia is not a small country. It's sparsely populated, has about 10 million people, but it's about 3 or 4 times the size of France. It's quite a large country. But it's not a poor country. It's an extremely wealthy country, and it's been wealthy for 500 years. It had the world's largest reserves of silver for a long time. Then there were tin mines that were exploited for about 60 or 70 years. And it now still has some of the largest reserves of natural gas in the world. It has some rare minerals that are now being exploited for the first time, and is extremely wealthy. The problem is that this country has always been dominated by 20 families at the top, 20 families that have names and surnames. Is not just a generalization, it's actually 20 families that have controlled the country's politics for 200 years and benefited from this mineral wealth and natural wealth and natural resources in the country. And so you could say the same thing for many of these countries. Peru is also rich in minerals, or a country like Venezuela, extremely fertile land, favorable climate, oil. I mean, these countries are very, very, potentially very wealthy, very rich, but the majority of the population live in poverty. This is the fundamental contradiction. And for instance, you take Venezuela. Since President Chavez came to power, what we've seen is a massive transformation, the attempt to use the oil wealth of the country to transform the living conditions of the majority of the people. I'll just give you a couple of examples. For instance, in relation to education, they have now eradicated illiteracy in the country. In a period of 18 months, using a Cuban-developed program of literacy, they lifted 1.8 million people from illiteracy. People who didn't know the basics of how to read and write. Now they know. This is a massive transformation of the living conditions and living standards of these people. Or, for instance, they have created about 200,000 new university places free of charge for the poorest sections of society, who were previously excluded from the education system. If they can do that in a country like Venezuela, the point is why this cannot be done in a country like Britain, for instance, where we've seen the introduction of tuition fees and other things like this, you know. Or, for instance, in the field of healthcare, they've had a massive advance. They introduced also a a program that is modeled on the Cuban model of primary health care in the community, because we just call Barrio Adentro, into the neighborhood, whereby thousands of doctors are now based inside the communities and giving access to basic health care to millions of people who had no access before. And so this shows some of the potential benefits of using the resources of these very wealthy, rich countries for the benefit of the majority of the population. However, there is a problem that these revolutionary movements, like in Venezuela, they've been decided and acted by the majority of the population. I mean, President Chavez has consistently polled more than 50, 60, 63% of the votes. In Bolivia, for instance, President Evo Morales has got now nearly 67% of the votes, much, much more popular support than any elected governments in Europe, on the basis of a massive turnout instead of voter apathy. So what we've seen is that there's been resistance by this oligarchy. The 120, 30, 50 families that control the wealth, the land, the banks, the political power in these countries have resisted, and they have not used democratic means. They don't really care about democracy. Democracy for them is just convenient means of dominating the country. If democracy doesn't give them the results that they want, then they use other means. We saw, for instance, in Venezuela in 2002 in April, a military coup organized by the oligarchy. And if you remember, that's what I said at the beginning. This is what used to happen in the 1960s, in the 1970s, also in the 1950s, in the 1940s, in the 1930s, in the 1910s. But the difference with the coup in Venezuela was this, that the coup was defeated by the action of the masses in the streets in less than 48 hours. The coup was extremely well prepared. It was with the participation of the U.S. and Spanish embassies, the high command of the army, the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, all the owners of the banks, the land, industry, the owners of the media, the owners of the TV stations, the newspapers, they all participated in this coup. It was classic Latin American coup. Nevertheless, the coup was defeated. The masses came out in the streets, the army split down the middle, and the coup plotters were removed in less than 48 hours. This is what was extraordinary about the Venezuelan movement, and it also shows the potential of ordinary people when they are enthusiastic about something, when they have something to defend, then they can really participate in politics and transform society. However, and this, by the way, gave a lot of hope throughout Latin America, because it proved that the cycle of revolutionary movement, military coup, defeat, bloody suppression of the movement could be broken. And there's been another attempted coup in Bolivia just 1 year ago, in September 2008, and it was also defeated, although only partially defeated. And so this has given even more encouragement and enthusiasm to the revolutionary movement throughout Latin America. What I will say is the following, that all these revolutionary movements, are probably the countries where it's most advanced at is Bolivia, Ecuador, and Venezuela. But in all countries, you see one form or another of this movement at different levels. What this movement is lacking, or why this movement has not been yet successful, is because even in Venezuela, which is where the revolution is most advanced, the old power structures are still in place to a large extent. You have a government that is led by Chavez, who really wants to change society and is linked with the ordinary masses that participate in the movement. But at the same time, you have the state apparatus, which is still basically the same that existed before, that was created and developed for 200 years to serve the interest of the oligarchy. And the state apparatus is sabotaging the work of the government, the work of the people participating in this movement. And you have the economy, even though there's been some nationalizations, the economy is still basically in private hands. It's a capitalist economy run for profit. And so the capitalists still control quite a lot of the land. But above all, the banks, which is obviously an important part of the economic system of a country, financial sector. Unless these two problems are solved, the problem of the capitalist economy, the problem of the capitalist state apparatus, then these revolutions are in danger. And the fact that in Venezuela they have defeated the counter-revolution in two or three or four occasions doesn't mean that this is always going to be the case. Because what happens is that when you raise people's expectations, you give them free healthcare, free education, then they want more. The people feel that they've achieved something, they want the whole lot, not just satisfied with a little bit of improvement. And fundamental problems are still not being solved in Venezuela, like housing or jobs. There's high inflation, there's about 30% inflation, partly through the sabotage of the economy of the part of the capitalists and the bankers. And unless these problems are solved fundamentally, then people might become disillusioned, people might become demoralized, they might become skeptical about the movement, and as soon as people withdraw from the movement, then the oligarchy will come back with a vengeance. This is what happened, for instance, in Nicaragua. Nicaragua, there was a revolution, successful revolution in 1979. Over a period of 10 years, the United States armed and financed gangs of thugs called the Contra, the counter-guerrillas, and they sabotaged the economy from within and attacked it from outside, to a situation where there was 1,000, 2,000, I think at one point it was up to 20,000% inflation, the economy was completely dislocated, and finally people said, yes, we made the revolution, but still we don't have anything to eat, the whole situation is a mess, and maybe, if we get rid of the Sandinista government, then we might have at least peace, and the situation might improve. This was not what happened. But nevertheless, the enthusiasm for the Sandinista revolution kind of withered away. And then finally, the right wing won a democratic election and destroyed any gains that the revolution had made. Why? Because the revolution was not taken to the last steps. The economy was not fully put in the hands of the people and the revolutionary democratic institutions. So I would say that this is the main contradiction that is present now in Latin America. The situation is very hopeful, but at the same time, the dangers are very big, because once you challenge imperialism and the power of the oligarchy, then you've taken on a big enemy, and this enemy will not be satisfied until it smashes this movement and reestablishes the principle that the powerful are the ones who rule in these countries. We've seen things like this. We've seen, for instance, the coup in Honduras. It took place on the 28th of June. In Honduras, there wasn't even, I would say, a revolutionary government. It was a government of the Liberal Party. And this government was attempting to introduce some measures, was starting to link up with Cuba, the social programs, Venezuela, the healthcare programs, and so on. And the oligarchy organized the coup on the 28th of June. And this is now, nearly 5 months to this day that the coup took place. And the coup is still in place. There's been a mass movement of resistance, hundreds of thousands of people in the streets, general strikes, but nevertheless they haven't been able to overthrow the coup. And they are having elections to legitimize this coup on Sunday this week. There's also another threat. The United States has now signed an agreement with Colombia for the free use of seven plus two military bases in Colombia. This will give the United States access to military bases that allow them to have more or less control over the whole of Latin America. And they're trying to bring conflicts in the border between Colombia and Venezuela as a way of defeating the revolution, possibly, as well. So there are all these dangers at the same time. However, what's been achieved in Latin America already is really exciting. And I will say, just to end, two points. One is that what is happening in Venezuela and in Latin America, this revolutionary movement, contains lessons not just for these countries, it contains lessons for all of us who are fighting for a better society in our own countries. And the main lesson is, the main lessons are two. One, that if you put the economy in the hands of ordinary working people, you run it democratically for the benefit of the majority, you can achieve anything. I mean, these things that they say, oh, well, we have to put up tuition fees because there's no money, or we have to cut public services because there's no money. Well, there's plenty of money in society. There's plenty of money even in a country like Bolivia, or in a country like Honduras, or in a country like Peru. There's plenty of money. The problem is not that there is no money or that there is no wealth, but the problem is that the wealth is concentrated at the top in the hands of a handful of unelected capitalists and bankers and landowners who run it in their own interest or their own private profit. And if you change that, then you can transform society fundamentally. And the second point is that the only way to transform that is through collective mass action of working people. And this can be done, and it's worked in Latin America, or at least we can see the beginning of this fundamental change. And this is what we need also in advanced capitalist countries. Situation is not exactly the same. Obviously, we can't establish direct parallels, but the type of movement that you need and the type of objectives that you have to have, exactly the same, because the capitalist system is one, internationally, is interrelated. And the other point that I wanted to make is this, that this revolutionary movement throughout Latin America is also having an impact in the U.S. United States is now also in crisis. Many people are starting to question the capitalist system. I mean, they've always been told the capitalist system works, and it did seem to work for a period of time for many people in the United States, even though it meant hard work and so on, but at least you could guarantee roof over your head, education for your children, a few basic things. But now not even that is guaranteed. People are starting to think about the capitalist system, and why is it that we told that the market is wonderful and it works very well, and now when the capitalists are in crisis, we have to bail them out. So all this questioning is starting also in the United States, but I will say that there's a direct connection between the revolution in Latin America and the revolution in the United States, and this is the movement of the Latin American immigrants in the United States that took place 3 or 4 years ago. Mass movement. Millions of people, documented and undocumented immigrant workers, in the streets, basically a general strike in places like San Francisco, Los Angeles, and so on, and even further south in San Diego, where the Latin American workers were kind of the link between the Latin American revolution and the revolution in the United States. There are all these clear links. So, in conclusion, I would say that there's a lot we can learn from Latin America. It's worth studying in detail every one of these countries: Peru, Bolivia, Venezuela, Ecuador, Honduras now, Mexico. It's worth really, they have a very rich history, rich tradition of revolutionary struggle. There's a lot we can learn from these movements that are taking place. And second, there's a lot of inspiration that we can draw from it. And third, there's something we need to do. We need to get organized in solidarity campaigns. I mean, quite a lot of the companies that operate in these countries, for instance, in Colombia, based in Britain, BP. BP, British Petroleum, which now likes to call itself Beyond Petroleum and is now rebranded itself as a green company, is in Colombia paying paramilitary thugs to kill trade union organizers and community organizers fighting to organize the workers that work for them or the communities that are affected by their projects and so on. So, I mean, there's a direct link between imperialism and our own countries. And so we need to get organized, we need to offer solidarity, because if these movements are smashed, then we all lose. If these movements get a bit of a breathing space to develop and to complete the revolution, then we also win.